Lee Chambers
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And joining me for Sunday brunch this morning is Cambridge MP Daniel Zeichner. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
What would you normally be doing on a Sunday?
Sadly, I'd be doing exactly the same things I'd normally be doing at this time, which is out talking to people of Cambridge on the doorsteps. So most Sunday mornings, 11 o'clock, are canvassing sessions with colleagues across the city.
So the canvassing goes on even when there's no general election, you're still out there meeting voters?
Yes, and I think that's one of the great positives of Cambridge politics. You go to much of the country, you'll find people generally say, we never see you at election time. I have to say some of the voters in Cambridge say, we're always seeing you. and I think that's... I attribute the success of the Cambridge Labour Party, but it's not just the Cambridge Labour Party. Liberal Democrats do the same. And I think that staying in touch with people, I find it invaluable. A week in Westminster is generally... put in context by going back and talking to people on the doorstep, you find that there's another world.
Well, what are they talking about at the moment, Daniel?
Well, let me give you a very good example. I don't know whether 105 covered the funeral of the mayor on Friday. I thought that was an extraordinary occasion. I think the Cambridge News said hundreds. I think it was probably closer to 1,000 people. And that was an example of a community together in solidarity. The kind of words that you don't see the Westminster pundits talking about very much. Across a wide spectrum of people, and in a week when politics seemed to be fracturing, actually what struck me, and it wasn't just me, many others too, was those issues of identity. On Nigel's coffin, there was his trade union banner, his Labour Party regalia, his Leeds United scarf. Actually, if you think that just a few people changing party from one to another is going to change that kind of long-term identity, people misunderstand what politics is really about. And that's why, people have said to me, are you going to join this new group? Of course I'm not. I'm Labour. I'm Labour, I'm Labour, I'm Labour. And so was Nigel, and so are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in this city, the active people, and the thousands of people who vote for us, and that's replicated across the country. And some people might say that's narrow tribalism. I say it's community.
Well, what do you think of the people who have left Labour Party?
Well, I know some of them very well, and I'm very sad and very sorry that they've gone. Politics, if you step back and take the longer view, this is what politics is often like. I'm afraid politics is often about trying to settle disagreements, quarrels, arguments. It isn't always straightforward and simple. I'm very sorry they've gone. I think they've done the wrong thing. But I don't disrespect them for that. They made their own decisions. But I think it's very hard to change the way cultures work. And we may come on to that a bit. But one thing that's interesting to me is both Joan Ryan and Gavin Shuker, for instance, who I knew quite well, both of them were strong advocates for not changing the voting system a few years ago. I remember Gavin coming to Cambridge to do a public meeting. Joan Ryan actually ran the national campaign against the alternative vote. So I think there's some contradictions here. They were very keen to keep the first-past-the-post current political system then, which says to me this is actually quite often about other things.
But Chukwuemeka saying it's become unbearable in the party.
I guess it depends how you define unbearable, and it depends how you position yourself within it. Quite clearly, I had high hopes in Chukwuemeka. I've known him a long time. What I would say is when I first met him over a decade ago, he was a rising star on the left. He was part of an organisation called Compass that I used to work with when I was at Unison. He did move rather seamlessly and quickly when he was Shadow Business Secretary for Ed Miliband from a position on the left to a position which felt much more on the right of the party. And I just think Chukwuemeka has been impatient. I think if he'd been more patient... What I've seen in my lifetime in politics is that politics goes in cycles and that he could have had a good future in the Labour Party, but I fear he's now set out in a different direction. History may prove him right. But John Curtis, who writes in the Sunday Times today, rather playfully suggests that possibly the people leaving should have spoken to Nigel Farage about how our electoral system works, because you can get 15 or 20% in the polls in this country and still win no seats. And I'm not making any predictions, but I just would say it's hard. And that's why we have these big coalitions of parties. The idea that politics is always comfortable or that people don't disagree. I've been in politics 40 years. And there's very rarely been a time when people haven't been quarrelling, in my experience.
But this issue of anti-Semitism, have you witnessed any anti-Semitism in the Labour Party?
Not locally. I mean, there were one or two cases where people have put stupid things on Facebook or on Twitter. And I do think actually a lot of this is more about social media. Truth is, anti-Semitism, horribly, is throughout our society, as we see in France at the moment. It's not just a UK phenomenon. So absolutely seriously should be treated and tackled everywhere. But I think the difference now is from 10 or 15 years ago, there were some pretty horrible things, 10, 20, 30 years ago, I can remember. But then, of course, what do people do? Write a letter to somebody? Go to a meeting? Now, everything is on social media. Everything can be tracked. I think it's actually very difficult for organisations, if you've got people who you don't want in your organisation, how you deal with that. And I'm sure the Labour Party should have acted more quickly, should have done more. But it's easily said. It's a voluntary organisation, remember. And I've drawn the comparison with a football club. If you've got some hooligans amongst your supporters, it doesn't mean to say that your club is fundamentally rotten. It means you've got some nasty people. And those are hard to deal with.
How is the Labour Party going to shake this, though? This issue has been around for, what, 2, 3, 4 years now, and it keeps coming back.
I think if you look back historically, you'll find that every time Labour is in opposition, there will be issues that are used against the Labour Party. Now, anti-Semitism is a vile, horrible thing. But I actually think that this is not just about anti-Semitism. I do think it's being used against the Labour Party. And to that extent, it's not going to be easy to resolve. I looked at some of the newspapers today, the ones I don't normally look at, the Mail on Sunday and the Sunday Express, and they're basically 40 or 50 pages of propaganda against the Labour Party. I remember 10, 15 years ago talking to the then General Secretary of the Labour Party, who had it on good authority, the Sunday Times every day had 2 pages left empty just for attacks on the Labour Party. Now, at the moment, it is anti-Semitism that is being used for that. If it wasn't that, it would be something else.
But these MPs, that's one of the reasons that they've given for leaving. So clearly they feel
it. And absolutely, of course they do. And it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. But what I'm saying is this is not just about anti-Semitism, it's about politics as well. And the thing to remember is this predates Jeremy Corbyn. Ed Miliband had this as well. So I think when the history has come to be written, when one's looking back, there might be, it may look slightly different from the way it looks now. But that's politics, and I make no complaints about that. So the Labour Party will carry on having to do more to deal with this issue, but I think it will be difficult.
Thank you, Daniel. What have you pulled out specifically from the newspapers?
Well, the main one I pulled out is, of course, the ongoing saga about our future relationship with the European Union. So the headlines in the Sunday Times in particular are suggesting that there's a major split within the government looming this week, that the Prime Minister may yet once again try and pull the vote and play for more time. But of course we're getting towards the end of this now, and some of the more sensible members of the cabinet are saying, frankly, you can't go on doing this because we're getting too close to the edge of the cliff now. And I mean, no responsible government would have brought us this close, in my view. So we shall see how it unfolds. I suspect most people have lost track of the various amendments and details of all this. But essentially, it looks like there will be a move this week led by Yvette Cooper to try and take no deal off the table, which should have been done a long time ago.
And how have you been voting for this? And are you in favour of a second referendum?
Well, I've been opposed absolutely to us leaving the European Union from the beginning. So I've voted on every occasion when I could, although sometimes it's quite complicated to work out what the best path is to do anything that will stop us leaving. I do support a vote. I do think in most people could see that it's 3 years on. This isn't a second vote. This is actually a vote on what the Prime Minister has managed to achieve, because it's, I'm of a trade union background. Quite often when you have disputes, you have a vote at the beginning to say, do you want to pursue this? And then when you get to the end, your negotiators come back and they say, well, this is what we've managed to achieve. What do you think? And that, to me, is where we're at now with a vote. So it's not a second vote. The Prime Minister's deal, just the language, it is no deal at all. It's a start of a negotiation. It's if people think this is the end of it, they've got that completely wrong. All that's happening is we've agreed to leave. What we haven't agreed is what any kind of relationship we should have in future. So for those who are fed up with it, the best thing they could do is actually remain. Tear it up now. Revoke Article 50. That's what I would do, which we could do tomorrow. Bring this whole thing to a close and say, look, we have looked very hard. I don't dispute the fact that people have worked very hard on trying to work out a way forward. But what we've discovered, for those of us who didn't already know it, is that we are incredibly closely linked to the wider world, and that separating yourself off comes at a huge potential cost. Now, some people may think that cost is worthwhile. But the question I've repeatedly asked them, never got an answer, of course, is how much are you actually prepared to pay? Do you want a drop of, are you prepared to accept a drop of 5% in your standard of living? 10%? 20%? 30%? Now, some of them say, we don't care. Doesn't matter how much. Well, I don't believe them. I think if we start to get the kind of shortages and problems that may well develop, particularly in things like our medicines, and some 41 million packages of medicines coming into the country each month, I think people will be aghast to find what it would actually mean. So given that we now know a lot of this, surely it's reasonable to say, well, the people made the decision in the first place. Let's see if that's now what people want.
Where do you think this is going to end? What would be your, you know, if you were a betting man, what would you put money on?
I think there will be a vote, and I think we will vote to stay. Not least because, of course, one of the things that's become increasingly obvious is if you want to leave the European Union, you probably break up the United Kingdom, because no one has come up with an answer to the intractable problem around in Ireland. And the reason they haven't come up with an answer is because it is not resolvable. It ultimately is a choice. So I was mulling over this, the ironies of this, on the way here this morning. You know, the UK Independence Party, well, was it the England Independence Party? Because that's where it will lead. It will lead to losing Ireland, probably, and probably losing Scotland. I'm not sure that's what most people thought this was leading to. And I don't blame them for that, because it's very complicated. But I think it's only reasonable to lay that out to people now and say, is this really, really where we want to be going? I don't think so.
So you think there'll be another referendum and we'll vote to stay in the European Union. What would be the consequences of that, though? I mean, the people who have voted first time and maybe second time to leave would feel...
Well, this is politics, isn't it? It is not a destination. It's an endless process. I think the one thing, positive thing that may have come out of all this is that people may have learnt a bit more about the complex nature of the modern world, and whether it's our political parties or our relationship with other countries. What we do know, I think, is that we've got some very, very big challenges in terms of climate change, technological change, and movements of people. These are the things. I never really thought the vote 3 years ago was all about the European Union. I don't think most people were voting on structures. It was an emotional response to a complicated and changing world. And good politicians would find a way of steering the country through that and explaining what the options are. And I think if you do that in a sensible way, then you can actually win many, many people over to a much more optimistic outcome from all this, which is that we're better off working with our neighbours, dealing with some of the underlying problems in other parts of the world as well, which is why I might pick up in a moment one of the issues in the papers around our aid programmes, because actually if we don't have a fairer world across the world, it will come back to haunt us here. And that interdependency argument, which interestingly, of course, some of our young people in the schools, when they were out on strike on the Friday before last, do seem to get in a way that perhaps the older generations perhaps failing to fully grasp.
Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And you're joining me with Daniel Zeichner, Cambridge MP, going through the papers. We will move on to what you've discovered in the papers, Daniel. There's just so much to talk about this week. But one last question before we leave the breakaway section of the Labour Party and the Conservative Party. That's what I want to ask you about, because, of course, one of our local MPs, Heidi Allen, has joined the independent group. What do you think about that?
Well, I know Heidi very well, obviously, and we work together very closely on a whole range of things. We do have some quite profound political differences, particularly around economic issues. But I've seen her being pretty miserable in her party, and I'm not entirely surprised that she's decided to leave. I just think it's a difficult thing to do for some of the reasons I've already explained. Political parties aren't just about voting. It's a whole cultural thing. It's a whole set of relationships. So I don't underestimate the difficulty. On a personal level, I wish her well, but in the end, I want to see a Labour MP in South Cambridgeshire.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Right, you've pulled out something about the aid programme.
Yes, there are other, people may be astonished to know there are other things going on in the world other than the collapse of our political parties and Brexit. But hidden away on page 31 of the Observer today is a story which I've been following and involved in, which is this issue around the 0.7% going to international aid, which was a big target for Labour for many years. And David Cameron used it, well, I say used, as part of that sort of rebranding the Conservative Party as a caring, compassionate party, which he didn't always have support from across his party for that. But what's going on at the moment is, I think, and others think, and 23 aid organisations have written to Chancellor making this point, that the aid budget is now being used in a number of different ways, which means that effectively it's not really 0.7%. And I've twice in the chamber in the last few weeks challenged Penny Mordaunt, who's the International Development Secretary, on this, and she was got quite shirty, particularly when I suggested that some of the money was being shifted to the defence budget, which it quite clearly is. And then a couple of weeks ago, and this is what's particularly picked up in this article, is that some of the money that's going is going to support projects across the world. Actually, some of the energy part of it is being used to support fossil fuel developments, and some of it's being used to support fracking in China. Now, some of that does seem rather extraordinary to many of us. It's a detailed issue, but it does go back to this bigger question of our role in the wider world and what we are using our resources for. I would argue very strongly that we need to make sure that the global inequalities are tackled, because without that, we're going to see people moving, and that is going to put stresses and strains on whether it's the external border of the European Union or the migration within the European Union, which ultimately leads us back to the same issue of why are people feeling unsettled.
And that's an article in what newspaper?
That's in the Observer, page 31, for those of you who are looking for it.
And one more thing before you go, Daniel. The other big story that's been around this week is the IS bride, Shamima Begum, and whether she should retain her British citizenship or have it revoked. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think you should follow the law, basically. And I've been astonished, I think, like many people, that Saeed Javid, I would say for reasons of his own leadership ambitions, has chosen pretty much to ignore the law. Whatever one feels about these young women and the things they sported and have said are just horrible, shameful. The fact is she's British, and she was radicalised here. So I think she should come back and face the law. And that seems to me to be the right way to do it, to effectively leave her stateless, which is what Saeed Javid appears to be trying to do, I think says far more about his ambitions within the Conservative Party, and frankly, should be doing the job as Home Secretary.
It's a very tumultuous time in politics at the moment, isn't it, to put it mildly. Do you enjoy it when it's like this? People are engaging with it, but there is also an air of desperation.
I don't think this kind of instability is good for people. I come across a lot of people now who are quite genuinely upset and unhappy and worried about the future. Also, remember, people's jobs are at risk here. And we've got thousands of EU citizens, non-UK EU nationals around Cambridge, whose future is totally uncertain at the moment. So, no, I don't like politics like this at all. I'd far rather have a genuinely stable government, a genuinely stable Labour government. And I think if people look back to the period a decade ago when we did have stable Labour government, the country was a much better place.
Do you think there'll be a general election before the next scheduled one?
I think it's really hard to say. It feels like we're heading that way. But when you actually look at the mechanics of how it might happen, it's quite hard to see. But the next few weeks are very, very hard to predict. So who knows? But those of us in the Labour Party in Cambridge, we love elections. We have them every year anyway. So we seem to have plenty of elections. It's always nice to get out and talk to people.
And are you still enjoying being an MP?
Oh, I love being the MP for Cambridge. It's it was a lifetime's ambition. You never quite know how you're going to feel about it, but it's been, even despite the tumultuous times and the disappointment of being in opposition, it's a fantastic, fantastic privilege. I enjoy it every day, and I love meeting people right across the city, and it's fantastic. But I would much rather have the problems of being in government than the frustrations of being in opposition.
Well, thank you ever so much, Daniel, for joining us. You're off canvassing. Where might your face be appearing this afternoon?
We're going somewhere into West Chesterton, so we'll be probably somewhere around Defrevel Road, I suspect.
Well, thank you ever so much for coming in and enjoying our croissants, your second
breakfast
of the day.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Daniel.